Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. My name, of course, is still Paul Madat. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us on this episode. I have Kevin Davis. He is Senior Benefits Consultant and Vice President at Univest Insurance, coming to us from just outside of Allentown, PA. Kevin, what's going on, man?
Oh, well, we had a little thing called an election this week in Pennsylvania, but let's not talk about that.
All right, let's move on past it then. But I know all eyes are on you these days in terms of where you're at in the world. But say hi to everybody and provide a quick intro.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Paul. Well, I am, as you said, outside of Allentown, Pennsylvania, and I've been working in that region for about 24 years now. So I guess in the later part of the 90s, started working in that region. And I started in college, not at all intending to be an insurance sales consultant, although that's what I've now been doing for more than half my life. I went to college as a criminal justice major, or also known as a pre-law major, and a labor law minor, and had the good opportunity in college to work at a law firm 30 hours a week to kind of help pay for going through college, and was in the labor department. And what that opened my eyes to is that I didn't want to be a lawyer, which was helpful before I incurred any debt to go on to law school, because it wasn't LA law and it wasn't as glamorous as what I thought when I watched that on television. But what I did generate a significant interest in, both working at the law firm in the labor department and in that major and minor in college, was benefits. That was in the early 90s. It was a big conversation point in the nation of America at that time about whether we should have nationalized healthcare, whether we should look at things like managed care versus PPOs. So that ended up being the path that led me to what I do now. I got recruited by what is now Aetna. It was called US Healthcare at that time, back in the 90s, out of college. And that came from my job at the law firm, interestingly. I was involved in helping change my law firm's benefits from Blue Cross to US Healthcare. And the US Healthcare sales manager said, if you can do what you did for your own employer with employers that you would call on in a sales capacity, then you're the perfect fit to come join US Healthcare as a sales rep. So without ever intending to enter a lifelong career in sales, that's how I got recruited into it.
Gotcha. Are you married, Dad?
Yep. Yes. I married my high school sweetheart, Jennifer. We met at the junior prom with different dates. That could be a whole other interesting story. Dated for 6 years, got married a year out of college. So we've now been married 26 years. So if you do the math, you can figure out how old I am. And I do have three daughters. She's almost 21. My oldest daughter, Natalie, who just got married this year in the pandemic. And then I've got two younger daughters who are 17 and 14.
Great. Well, listen, it's nice to meet you. I appreciate you allocating the time. Let's get into your story here. So, you know, the title of the podcast is called Your Intention Matters. And that's really built, you know, Kevin, on the foundation that nothing is really given to any of us. Everything is earned. And it all starts with what's up top, with our intention and with our mindset. And so you touched on your education, that you went to St. Joseph's University in Pennsylvania, background in criminal justice, labor law. It's funny that you mentioned LA law. Some people on the podcast would have no idea what that is, because I'm a 74 baby, which I think you might be as well. And so yeah. I certainly remember LA law. And I had a good buddy of mine and guest on the podcast, Mike Brower out of Denver. Must have been 3 or 4 months ago now. And when he was graduating college, he went into law school as well afterwards. But he had this vision of LA law also, of I'm in the courtroom and here's the bloody knife. And it's like, and then you realize what a lawyer really is day to day. It's very few actually even see a courtroom, let alone have that type of moment. And so I'm curious about something with your realization that you weren't going to really get into the law industry, become a lawyer or anything. Was that a hard pill to swallow? Was that an easy transition? Or what was it like when you graduated and you came to that realization, yeah, that just wasn't for me?
Yeah, it's great because I've got revisionist history now, so I can kind of look back on it and understand that it was for all the right reasons. But at the time, yes, it was a disappointment. When I worked at the law firm, thought it was glamorous. It's exactly like you described. I'd be in a courtroom. And actually, just I'll take one step back. In high school, I was part of a mock trial team, and we won a national mock trial competition. So I viewed myself as like, that's clearly what I'm supposed to do. You know, my parents always said, you're very argumentative. You're very persuasive.
And you're in a courtroom.
Exactly. And you're very competitive and you think well on your feet, you know, these types of things. So these were, you know, why it sounded like it would be the right thing. And then, yeah, my eyes just got open working at a law firm that it really is a lot of time in a library and reading books and writing briefs and filing, you know, and it's nowhere near as glamorous as I thought. And actually worse than that, and this is not casting a net over the whole profession, but it actually didn't look good for work-life balance either. Mm. It looked to me like it was going to be a lot of time away from my family, and I wanted something a little more integrated. So in hindsight, looking back, and Daniel Pink's book, To Sell as Human, has helped me see this, in that he said 1 in 8 people call their profession sales, but 8 in 8 people, he says, he believes do a version of selling, which he defines as moving somebody from one position to another. Hmm. And so I think I wanted to be a lawyer because I wanted to move somebody from one position to another. And I actually better get to do that being an insurance sales consultant than I ever would have gotten to do as a lawyer. So in many ways, this actually fits my personality even better. But I don't think anybody in the high school, when they write, what do you want to be when you grow up, writes insurance sales consultant. That's, yeah, I think, the difference.
That's fair. And that's what we were talking about before we hit record, that most of us in the world of sales never really thought we'd even get into, you know, this type of a career, let alone sustain it. And so what did you do after college? What was your first gig, so to speak?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, I actually did get recruited by U.S. Healthcare, which is now Aetna, because they saw my role in college. So I was literally just still a college student, but I was working 30 hours a week, and I worked in the benefits department because they were housed within the labor department. So, you know, COBRA had become a law not long before that. They were about to pass the Family and Medical Leave Act. You know, there were a lot of like labor laws that integrated with benefits. So having kind of a legal perspective about benefits made me an interesting recruit for U.S. Healthcare, because I think they saw I could kind of enter it as an entry level person that they could put through a 6-week training. They have a pretty famous training they put people through where you had to pass a test every week or you're fired. It was very kind of Glengarry Glen Ross, third place, you're fired. And one of the final tests you had to pass was you had to memorize, I think it was a 7-page single spaced typed presentation, and give the presentation to the classroom. And, you know, fortunately I was blessed with a pretty good memory, where when I read things, I kind of see them for the most part in my head. So I was pretty capable at that. And as it turns out, a lot of the sales skill they were looking for is kind of similar to being a lawyer. It's reading things, knowing them, and being able to top of your head, be able to pull them out as needed to make a persuasive argument or to kind of show your knowledge. And so in a lot of ways, that's my path into insurance, and it's my path to what I currently do. And I've actually thought in many ways what I do over the past many years now is I kind of wear both a legal compliance hat and an insurance consulting hat. So kind of how I started out is a good framework or background for what I do now.
You know, it's one thing to be competitive. It's one thing to, you know, there is a narrative out there that we're all salespeople. We're all selling something, our time, and we're selling, you know, whatever, people to date us. And there's that narrative that we're all salespeople, but it's a whole other level when you actually do it as a career. Did you take to sales right away? Did you like the pressure of the number and the actual sales cycle? Did you take to that, or did it take a while for you to really kind of find your groove?
So again, because I'm competitive, I think having things like a board with your name on it, with the names of all of your coworkers, and having, I think when I first started, maybe a weekly quota, I think there was literally something I was being measured on weekly. Mm. Yes, it was stressful. I won't say I wasn't stressed by it. And because I didn't think this is what I was born to do, I adapted to it. And because 2/3 of my income from the very, very beginning was commission-based, and now I'm 100% commission-based, I think my drive to do well at something probably superseded any concern I had about what I had to do to be successful. So I would say that still is true about me today. Mm-hmm. Like the whole, I think it's Mark Twain, you know, talks about swallow the frog first, like take that hard thing you don't want to do and just do it head on, is one of the things I kind of realized really early on in that job, which is, okay, what's the hard thing I have to do and get that done? So then maybe if I have success at that, everything from there is going to be more downhill.
You know, I know you've had some good runs at a few different companies here. So I want to take us through your career a little bit here. So I know you started at US Healthcare. You were there for a couple of years, if I have that right. And then you moved on to, was it Oxford Health?
It was, yes. Okay. And that's where I met two of my mentors. And I got recruited there. They were coming into Philadelphia with a different product to compete with Blue Cross and US Healthcare. And so I was realizing it would be of interest to me to learn a different product so that I would be even more diversified if I ever ended up doing what I do now, so really that job was a great next job to do what I currently do, which is to be a consultant with knowledge of all the different options that are out there. And so, but my two mentors I met there were Dennis and also Vaughn. And I've worked with both of them twice there and one other place. And we were in Toastmasters International together. We were very similar minded in that we were almost like David versus Goliath. We were that third option in Philadelphia, trying to take on big Blue Cross and also big, you know, US Healthcare, which actually had become Aetna at that point. And I relished that sort of David versus Goliath role. And I think it's part of what gives me my drive even today, as working for a smaller firm against bigger firms has actually been one of my drivers personally.
And so how long were you at Oxford for?
Also about 2 years as well. And what happened, unfortunately, is their stock dropped from $97 to $7 a share, and they decided to pull out of the Philadelphia market. So that led to me jumping in with both feet into the consulting world. And I left with my mentor and manager, Vaughn, and we together, almost as a package, went over to what became Bank of America's insurance division.
Oh, is that right? Okay. So so your decision to move to B of A really wasn't elective initially. It was a circumstance at the late 90s. Oxford went through some trouble and you find yourself, okay, now what? And so how many years were you at B of A underneath, I guess, your full stretch there?
Yeah, 6 years. So Vaughn and I went there together with him as the sales manager, me as his sales consultant. That was a commission only job. So it was my first ever commission only job. And that was in the late 90s. And my wife and I had been married a few years without children yet. So that's of course a terrifying thing to say, hey, hon, I'm going to take a job where I don't know what I'm going to make, but I have opportunity, based on my success. So it's truly betting on yourself. And thankfully, I got off to a really great start. That was, I think that first year I worked as a consultant at what became Bank of America's insurance division, was maybe, I think, my fourth best year out of 24 years of doing this. So it gives you some context that if you start at that kind of level, almost it sort of set a bar for me on, wow, I know I can do this much in a year. And so what that means in my world is not so much number of companies, but like maybe almost you could equate it to number of employees that work at companies who I bring on as clients. So if I used to use rough math, bring on 1,000 new employees that I bring on, you know, added to my client base, and that could be made up of one company of 1,000 employees or 10 with 100 each, you know, something along those lines. That was in essence kind of the bar I set that first year. And the lowest bar I've ever allowed myself to do would maybe be about half that, you know? So I've ranged between half what I did that first year and a little bit more than I did that first year. And then I've had 24 straight years of that level of production.
You know, every generation, every stretch of time, every kind of decade has their ups and downs and things to go through. And for anybody listening, remembers the 80s and the 90s and 70s and 2000s. And, you know, I'm certainly old enough to remember that the late 90s were an interesting time because they were flying high at one period. The dot-coms were all over the place and stock market was going through the roof. The NASDAQ, I remember when it hit 5,000, was like, oh my God, the NASDAQ hit 5,000. Like now, of course, 5,000 would be a disaster if it was only at 5,000. But I remember then all of a sudden, you know, the balloon popped and the dot-coms all went away and a lot of people were in trouble. Then, of course, September 11th hits in 2001 and the impact that that had globally on the world. And so you battled through, you know, some tough hurdles there over your 6 years at B of A. And so after a 6 year stretch with a large organization like that, and I was a guy who worked at Xerox for about a decade. And so I know that there's a lot of bandwidth and some runway when you work under a large organization. What was next for you? Did USI, I think it was USI, if I have that right, did they find you? Did you raise your hand after 6 years doing very well and, you know, turning the corner? What was behind your decision to move on after a pretty good run?
Yeah, so I'm going to give a shout out to headhunters or executive recruiters right now, because every single job other than that U.S. healthcare one, where I was directly recruited by the sales manager who I worked with, every other job has been that hidden job market where an executive recruiter has hit me up on LinkedIn and sold me on some opportunity. And so I got to USI that way, and I got to my current employer, Univest, that same way. And so, yeah, so USI had been recruiting me for a couple of years because I think they could see there was going to be some disruption with Bank of America. Ultimately, Bank of America did sell its insurance division. So I wouldn't have been able to stay there either way. But rather than wait for that to happen, I think USI strategically saw I would be a good add to their team. They had offices in the regions I worked in, so that Allentown area. And they were an up-and-coming insurance broker at that time. They had only been founded in the early 90s, and here they were recruiting me in the early 2000s. And so they were just sort of like a 10-year-old company. I had not really heard much about them. They had started in California and had expanded across the country. And so, again, back to my David versus Goliath thing, I kind of joined them, you know, going from big Bank of America to this kind of, you know, smaller mid-sized USI. And interestingly, my main reason for moving on from there, also involving a headhunter, is USI went from, you know, half the size they are now, maybe even a third. I think they tripled in size during the 10 years I was there.
10 years.
And what I noticed is even having, you know, significant success there, success every year that I was there, that they were no longer that small, trying to compete company. They almost kind of became that bigger competitor. I kind of relish selling against as opposed to being on that team. I sort of like being that other side of that equation is my bent.
Gotcha. Did they dangle a base salary with you, or was the 100% commission there as well?
Yeah, so there was a draw against commission. So yeah, there was a 2-year ramp to get me to being fully validated, and I was again successful. In fact, I think it was my second year there was one of my top, you know, 4 sales years of my career. So I got off to a nice quick start, and then made the leaders conference literally every year that I was there.
You know, I run a story that says that I think base salaries are perfectly fine for companies to offer, and they can add stability in people's life. But I'm a guy who hasn't had a base salary in forever. I think of my, you know, the last 20 years, I might have had one for three of them. And the rest of the time, it's been 100% commission. And now me being self-employed and me doing what I'm doing, I've been on a skinny branch for like a lifetime. And so I run a story that says kind of a base salary can make you complacent, because I found myself guilty of that, where I just knew the lights would stay on 1 month if I didn't do well. And now all of a sudden, no, there's nothing there. And so does that drive you, knowing that, you know, I hate using this language, but what you kill is what you eat, right? There's nothing there. There's no net, right?
Yeah, agreed. So now, you know, been married 26 years, have three daughters, just had to pay for my first wedding, have also had to pay for, you know.
You should have told her to get married by Zoom or in a pandemic, right?
Exactly. Well, we did get some money back from the caterer because we weren't able to have as many guests as expected. But as far as, what drives me now is all family. So, you know, my first daughter got through college, and I was able to help her pay for her college without debt. So that drove me, also paying for her wedding. And now I'm in that process now with the next daughter, who's getting ready to have college tuition, and then eventually, you know, probably a wedding. Yeah. And then the third one. So, you know, home ownership, expenses, you know, beginning with the end in mind, so to speak, of I've got such and such amount I must accomplish, gives me I can't do any less than this kind of a mentality. And yet what I love about commission only is it also means I have no limit on what I could accomplish. And I've mentioned a couple different times, you know, measuring myself against my past success. And I feel like that's also what gets me up every day is, I remember my wife saying this to me, and I thought this was a really good accountability statement. I had a year at one of the places I've worked. I think it was actually my first year here at Univest, which was pretty much like one of the lowest years I had in my 10 years at Univest. And I won an award for, you know, Salesperson of the Year. And I brought home the little plaque, and, you know, it sits in my desk here at home. And I remember my wife looking at the award and saying, "Isn't that kind of like the lowest year you had at your last place?" And it was like a punch in the gut, you know, because it was like, you know, don't rest on your laurels. Don't be happy with that. You know you can do better than that. And again, I didn't make the move here to be the top person. In fact, I'd almost rather I wasn't. I would almost rather I'm surrounded by a bunch of people who were all striving to do better than we did the year before. And I actually will tell you that is what brought me here, I want to be with a bunch of people who want to be the top performer, because I don't believe it's a me versus my coworker environment. And I will say I've worked places where it turned into that. It turned into, you know, me versus you, whereas if you're commission only, actually that should be off the table. We're really all in a position of improving our situations. We're all in a position of doing better than we did the year before. And I'm very happy to say in my 6 years here, that was my worst year here, my first year. Each year has been better. And so each time I bring home a new one of those plaques, the number has been bigger. And my wife has been complimentary of, "Oh, I see you had a year more like that one year you had," that kind of thing. And obviously she sees that in my pay as well. But no, I think that kind of like frank conversation with your spouse is probably pretty important. Because if you do it in denial, or you live off of what you hope to sell versus what you actually accomplish, then that's not being transparent with your loved ones. And so for me, if I'm not going to have as good of a year as I expect, I set that proper expectation. But my hope is I'm under promising and over delivering across the board.
When after better part of 10 years at USI and you moved on, and USI not being the company it was maybe throughout your tenure there, were you packaged off? How did your exit happen?
Yeah, it was interesting. So they didn't want me to leave. Thankfully, that's always a good thing. I was made kind of counter offers, so to speak. And it's hard to move when you're in commission only and you've built up a client base, because naturally you do have to sort of leave those clients behind, at least for a time period, and hope to maybe work with them again. So that was a little bit of the conversation. No, I tried to package it off. Back to your point, I tried to see would they be willing to do that. And they said, no, that's not our policy. Therefore, we had a respectful parting of the ways, still friends, still connected with many of the people there. So I would say it went about as well as it could go. And I'm happy to say the top point I had reached in 10 years there, I've already surpassed in my fourth year here. So it clearly looks like I made the right decision for me and my family, because I've already gotten further in my first 4 years here than I had reached at my pinnacle of my 10th year there.
Well, Kevin, it's been a lot of fun speaking with you. Talk to me about 2020. Congratulations on your daughter getting married and what that brings, yeah, to, I'm sure, to your family. But 2020, choppy waters a little bit, up and down on a number of different levels. How have you managed the last, better part of 8 or 9 months professionally, personally? What's going on?
Sure, sure. So I do have a success story personally. So I weighed about 25 pounds more than I do currently at the start of this pandemic. So I have a before and after picture I did post in one post on LinkedIn from me on Mother's Day, 25 pounds heavier, and then me on my birthday, 25 pounds less, which is end of September. And two things about 2020 that led me to do that. You know, the first one was I'm not on the go, therefore I'm not eating as much fast food or French fries at restaurants or pastries at, you know, various breakfast meetings. And then two, I've been able to use some of this extra time I'm not commuting to focus on healthy behaviors. So I'm getting about 9 miles of walking in per day now as a behavior. And I am also, you know, more diligently food journaling and really focusing on the ingredients of what I'm eating. And I will tell you, I feel better. I don't need caffeine beyond that first morning coffee. I used to get sluggish in the afternoon, used to need the afternoon Diet Coke or coffee, or pick-me-up or candy, yeah, something like that. I'm finding feeling better has made me have better work-life balance, and spending less time in my car has allowed me to have more family time, but also more health and wellness time. And then I think that's also created better mental health time, because part of the way to deal with, that's the second reason I did all that, is I was hearing about being a health insurance consultant, underlying health conditions makes you more susceptible to COVID. And I learned that there were 4 things you could do to make yourself less susceptible to COVID being a serious illness. And they were to get 30 minutes of vigorous exercise a day. I was not doing that, and I am now. To eat fruits and vegetables every day. Mm-hmm. Was not doing that. I'm doing that now. Have a BMI of less than 30. My BMI was close to 30. It was around 29. It is now 22. So I've done a lot about that. And then the 4th thing was don't use tobacco. That was the only one of the 4 I was actually doing successfully. So, nice. So by doing those 4 things, it occurred to me, one, I'd hopefully be around for my family if I were to contract the illness. And then two, I don't want to be a hypocrite. And when I'm giving advice to my customers about buying insurance, about keeping their employees healthy and well, I want to make sure I'm actually doing the things I'm suggesting they do. So I decided I wanted to lead by example, both for my family and for my customers. And there'll be more about that soon. Stay tuned. I did an interview about a week ago about my journey, and it will be something I will be posting online to share with my customers.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. I'm glad to hear that. Kevin, we'll close with this. I always like to ask anybody who is a guest on the podcast, any advice, feedback, like what's been your foundation thus far in your life? Anything you want to share? Anything you want to add?
Yeah, for sure. So I had mentioned before we started recording that probably the most influential book I've read in sales was Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And then also the follow-up book, First Things First, about time management. So my theme for my business plan for 2021 is one of his habits, be proactive. And what I love about the description of it, because I think it fits the time we're in especially, that you know you are responsible for your behavior, results, and your growth. And his definition of habit one is be proactive is about taking responsibility for your life. You can't keep blaming everything on your parents or grandparents. They don't blame genetics, circumstances, conditions, or conditioning for their behavior. They know they choose their behavior. Mm. And so I have decided that, you know, what I can do in the middle of things I can't control, like a pandemic, is I can choose my behavior. And so if I choose to be proactive, and if I choose, one of the other habits is to begin with the end in mind of, you know, this is, I'm going to do no worse than this. I can work backwards from that to make sure I'm doing the daily habits to make that happen, which includes things like putting first things first, that swallowing the frog idea. Mm-hmm. And then my favorite of his seven habits, and it's the one I really live by, is think win-win. I think in this kind of polarized world we're in, where I mentioned earlier, in a commission only sales environment, it isn't I come in first, you come in second, someone else comes in third, and oh great, I did better than so and so. It's really almost more like, could we all do better and we would all benefit by doing better? And really my job is to deliver a satisfactory result for both my insurance clients and the insurance carriers whose products I'm representing. So I really am getting to live out thinking win-win, which is code for really the golden rule, which is how do you do unto others the way you want people to do unto you? And so what I love is I don't have to be ashamed to tell people I'm an insurance consultant. It's not an embarrassing profession. It's actually something I'm proud of. It's something I get to do that really gets to help people in need, especially in a pandemic. People really do need good health insurance right now. So I really... I'm proud to do what I do, but I'm also humbled to get to do what I do all at the same time.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that's great, great commentary there. And congrats on what you've been able to create thus far. I appreciate you being on, man.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure to speak with you. And anytime you want to talk again, I'm game.
All right, man. I appreciate that. All right, everybody, let's wrap another episode up right now. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We are online at sellingisimple.com. We'll catch you next week, and be safe, everybody.